Hannah Murray, TRE, in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Africa Daily Clark, who is the founder of the Vitamin D Project, a lifestyle platform that celebrates mindful living, sustainable home interiors and cultural advocacy. Her book, You Are Home, is the ultimate guide to creating a space that nourishes and supports, one that lifts your mood when you turn your key in the front door and offers you a refuge from the world outside. Welcome to the show, Africa.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. And what a lovely idea for a book. Where does it all come from? Tell us about your background and how you got into this side of things.
That's really kind. Thank you. I think I started occupying space online around about 2018, 2019. And I think really towards the pandemic, with so many of us sat at home desperate for a connection, a spotlight was shone on my account because I was showing a side of living that a lot of people, unbeknownst to me, were not that aware of previously. And that was living social housing. And really, yeah, a lot of traction just gained from there.
Oh, amazing. Because you made a life-changing decision, didn't you, to leave social housing in central London for a fixer-upper by the sea. When was that?
That's right. So we did that about 18 months later. That was late 2021. And I think that people had really appreciated coming along on this kind of fixer-upper journey, having seen that we had pretty much applied the same foundations to where we'd lived previously and treated our previous home as a forever home, even though, of course, it was temporary.
Yeah. And a lot of the things that I guess puts people off from doing a lot of this is money or lack of money. And I think a lot of people would think that it takes money in order to redo your house and add different furnishings and things like that. But you're saying not necessarily.
That's right. And it certainly can. It just all depends on approach. A lot of what I talk about in the book is sourcing things sustainably. So for me, my best friend is resale platforms online, so Facebook Marketplace, eBay, things like that. And really just almost taking advantage of the fact that so many people are into this kind of like throwaway culture of completely fit for purpose, beautiful products, and making the most of that myself by bagging a bargain.
Yeah. So does that make it difficult to get things because you're buying things from different places and different people? Does that make it difficult to get things to match? I feel like with interior design, people seem to be obsessed with everything matching.
It's definitely an obsession. It's not one that I am currently obsessed with. I think once you know what you like, you really do start gravitating towards the same sort of things. And I try to routinely not just have an open search. I try to really spend a lot of time filtering my searches right down specifically to what it is that we need so that I only actually receive notifications for the things that we're interested in and don't have that kind of overwhelm, because it's just as easy as with fast fashion to buy things that you don't need with secondhand things. So I'd say that the safe search is certainly works for us.
Yeah. And where do you suggest that people start in their house if they're thinking, yeah, I want to change, I want things to look a bit different, I'd like to have different types of furniture? Where do people begin?
I think the best place of all, and we really do hone in on this in the book, is to think about the feelings that you've had in multiple homes that you've visited over your life. Not so much how things look. And I know that can be quite at odds with what our instinct is to do, but really think about the homes and the spaces where you felt incredibly safe, where you felt inspired, and then go back to basics and think to yourself what it was about those spaces, those homes that made you feel that way. And start to emulate those things. So, for example, with me, my husband and I, we've got four young children, and it's really important that we, for our own sanity, are not spending time scrubbing walls ferociously or, you know, desperately like bleaching sofas and stuff to keep them clean. And so for us, one of the most important things is that everything is tactile, child-friendly, and also that it starts off kind of looking a bit dogged and well-worn, because then we're never going to be too precious about things at all when it comes to the children. And really that just adds to that overarching feeling of the fact that the home is welcoming. So certainly I'd say to try and focus in on how certain spaces make you feel.
Yeah, it's true. You can go into, I'm sure everyone can relate, having gone into a home that looks like a show home, you know, where everything's perfect and everything's white and angular and very minimalistic. There aren't many ornaments at all on the surfaces or books or toys or things like that. And you kind of go, wow, this is perfect. But then also think, yeah, but it doesn't feel that homely or warm even. So it's, again, it's not about having everything perfect, is it? It's creating a feeling that's like home, whatever that means to you.
Absolutely that. And that extends to colours. There'll be certain spaces that you've been in where the colours have just made you feel calm, for example, and they may not be the colours that you think that you like, or perhaps it's not the clothes that you wear on your, the colours that you wear on your clothing, for example, but in your home, it might be just right. So I think the best starting point is to really do that bit of research. You know, decorating our spaces is a forever job. It's not something that can be done overnight. And so it really does warrant a bit of time and research in the beginning as well.
Yeah. And also, people don't need to stick to trends. I mean, there's a big sort of grey trend that's been around for the last few years. It was all browns and beiges for a while, and then it went to grey. And I don't want grey in my house. So I've never liked to follow trends just because they're a trend. I mean, it can work in people's houses, of course, and can look very nice. But just personally, I'm not a fan. So I'm thinking, well, I don't want grey in my house.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the only thing that does come good from trends is that it does kind of make things more accessible. If you've got a really, really niche style and you just so happen to be fortunate enough that trend comes around, then find yourself that everybody's made something in this version that's more accessible to your price point. But no, I completely agree. I think trends is, you know, I spent 3 years working for a very large interior design chain. I used to manage their showrooms. And I think once you understand the level of marketing that goes into making people want a certain trend, it would take a lifetime to get me back on that cycle of ever thinking in that way again.
Yeah. At the same time, though, I guess if you're selling your house, then maybe you need to think about things differently. Because if you love pink, for example, and you've got lots of pink walls and it makes you happy and comfortable, that's fine. But when you go to sell the house, that could hold you back.
You know, it could, but I'm a bit at odds with this one. I find I'm always on the outside view of this one. So I think your view is definitely the majority. But I just think, you know, our homes, once we move somewhere new, they're going to be stripped back again. And a colour paint or furniture should never put someone off from purchasing their dream home. Whereas what a lot of us tend to do then is live in this limited view that is always of the mindset of, oh, let's not go too far in case we want to sell one day. And that can have a real impact on your psyche long term. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with toning things down a bit before you've got a view in. But ultimately, I think the right person for your home will always find it and will always be able to look through what the current view is.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I mean, this sounds really obvious, but I'm sure it won't be to a lot of people. What I said in the introduction, the importance of creating a space and a sanctuary, if you like, that when you turn your key in your front door, you're happy to be home and you like being home. So I guess people need to think more about that instead of thinking, oh, I'm home. It should be a happy, welcoming space, whether that's to do with doing more, I don't know, tidying, decluttering, cleaning or painting or a mixture of all of those things. Make it a happy, pleasant place to be.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And it sounds obvious, but I think for so many of us, we do get bogged down into our home being the space where we kind of just dump all of our problems. And so for many of us, it doesn't feel that way. And there is a big shift that we speak about in the book, particularly about how to get us there. Even just to the point of everything having its own space. I appreciate that some of us are maximalists, some of us are minimalists, some of us are living in spaces where there are far too many people for the amount of space that we have. But really just taking certain steps to make sure that our home gradually suits us that bit more week on week, the jobs that are manageable, the things that we can afford to do, will certainly have a huge impact on how we feel as we turn our key getting home each evening.
Yeah. Everything having its own space, that's such a big thing, isn't it? Again, there'll be people that have been living like that for years and it's really obvious, but then there'll be other people who are constantly losing things and can't find things because they don't have a home for where they put their keys every day, or they don't have a home for scissors or whatever. So having a home for everything is a big thing, so we're not running around looking for stuff all the time.
Absolutely. And you're right to say some of us were just not raised in that way. And what might sound obvious to someone else can be such a stressor to the next person because it just hasn't been mapped out for them. Particularly with my children, there's an instance that I write about in the book about my children just not being able to keep their room clean in terms of laundry. So, you know, get home from school, whip off their uniform, put on a fancy dress outfit that gets wet, put on something else that gets wet. You know, these mountains of clothing ended up on the floor. And me realizing that actually our laundry basket was locked away in our utility room with all of the, you know, like cleaning products that we don't want kids to touch, for example. So we wasn't making it accessible at all for the children to be able to tidy up after themselves. Everything else is tiny, but when it came to clothing, it was such a simple solution to put an additional laundry basket in the toilet next to their bedroom. Problem solved.
Yeah, so they've got their own one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And your book, You Are Home, is divided into four sections. Tell us about the different sections.
That's right. So we start with live, and then we go on to embrace, and then source, and then create. And I basically just wanted to make this approach that does feel quite natural to me as easy as possible for somebody who the whole concept might feel quite alien. So, for example, in live, we talk about making a house a home. Who is it exactly that lives and works here? And then just a reinforcement that the perfect home doesn't exist. And then going on to embrace, it's all about finding your own taste and style. So it was really important to me that if somebody read this book from start to finish, they wouldn't end up with a home like mine, but rather they'd end up with the perfect home for them. Under embrace, we also spoke about the home as a whole, because it's quite easy to get bogged down into doing one room at a time. And then if you're anything like the average person and funds are tight, over 10 years of you just doing one room at a time, you can lose all sense of cohesion. So that was really important for me. And then also easy updates is under embrace as well. Then moving on to source, we spoke about process and provenance, which is really important to me, just to get the consumers in the mindset of thinking about exactly who it was that made all the items that get brought into their home and the journey that it went on as well, and why purchasing secondhand can really be a good workaround of that. We're kind of in a really good position at the moment of thinking about who made our clothes. And I'm trying to get more and more people to think the same way about the furniture that they bring in and all the little like decor items as well. So we also talk about sourcing materials in the source chapter and a bit more about pre-loved sourcing and then secondhand items as well. And then finally, it's the chapter called Create. So all about creativity in your home, where to start, what things to spend your money on, caring and maintaining your home, which for me is one of the most important things of all. And lastly, about creating connection.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you want to feel proud of your home, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the Vitamin D project as well. I wanted to ask you about that.
Well, it's a funny one. It's one of those names that just stuck a very long time ago and might not really match up to our current way of life. But I'm far too sentimental to change the name. But really, it was just a space. You know, I just had my first child. She's 9 and a half now, so almost a decade ago. And was just trying to connect with like-minded people online who cared about similar things. I was trying to source secondhand clothing for my children, clothing that was made well, and people who were paid fairly, but it wasn't quite in my price bracket. So, you know, finding mums who were selling things on secondhand. And then also about travel as well, and how traveling allowed my family, who at the time were on quite a limited income, allowed us to kind of expand our minds and kind of have an insight into what the future might hold, you know, meeting different cultures, different people, for example. And as I went on to have more children and my work progressed and I began talking about lots of different things, particularly social justice things, I kind of just attracted more and more like-minded people. There were times when, for example, through ill health or maternity leave, I kind of took a step back, but then I'd always sustain it with things like takeovers, where I'd have much smaller Instagram accounts, essentially host for a day at a time, who kind of had very similar values to me, but were very different in and of themselves. And yeah, it's just evolved into something really special that doesn't need to have a singular niche and can kind of just show up as and when, to keep people inspired and also to keep me accountable as well.
Yeah, great. Well, if people want to get a copy of You Are Home, it's available now on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Africa Daily Clark, who we've been chatting with today. Africa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been lovely. Thank you.